Welcome to the Insiders Insights podcast, where we share with you the thoughts of the individuals who are working for projects that are changing the world. Thank you to our sponsor, Credit Coin, the building blocks of trust. For more details, please visit the show notes below.
Welcome everybody to Off-Chain Twitter Spaces. Today we have wonderful guests from Lisbon, and we're going to talk about why all the Web3 people are suddenly moving to Lisbon. So during our podcast, we get very close and personal with people working in Web3 industry that are changing, that are aiming to change the world. And we are going to ask for tips and tricks on how to find a job in this industry and how to find a place where the taxation and regulations are favorable for this industry. But before we start, let me please introduce Off-Chain to you. Off-Chain is a global networking organization. We have chapters in more than 50 cities around the world, from London to Paris to African countries and Latin America. If you're in Asia, you can hop on a plane and go to Off-Chain in Kuala Lumpur. And next day, you can visit Off-Chain in Singapore. We welcome all levels, all crypto levels. If you're just interested in buying some Bitcoin, welcome. If you're already a trader with years of experience, please join us. If you're an NFT artist who is looking to find and help to support their community, welcome. We have all kinds of people here. Thank you so much. Now, let me please introduce our guests. Today, we have Anthony. And I think the first question will be for you. Could you please introduce yourself and give us maybe a quick background of yours, maybe just 2 or 3 minutes. What do you do? How did you get into the space? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you so much for the kind introduction. So for those who don't know me, my name's Anthony Day. I've been working in blockchain or with blockchain technology for about 7 years, 8 years now. Started with large consulting companies, so with Deloitte and with IBM, working on implementations of all different types of chain. We did everything from public to permissioned for enterprises, for governments, for startups. And then for the last few months, I've been working with Parity Technologies, who are the ecosystem and growth organization behind the Polkadot blockchain. And so my role, typically, I work in strategy, growth, go-to-market, and ecosystem development. So my background, my career has always been about helping to use technology to solve problems or to make improve commercial outcomes or for digital transformation. So the area I focus most is helping organizations to work with, well, in this case, or more recently, Polkadot, but usually any blockchain technology to help people understand the opportunities, the potential of blockchain technology and how they can actually use it from a viable perspective, not just because of hype. I also host the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast. Believe me, I do believe that blockchain has a role to play, but I've been focusing on telling the stories of different countries around the world and the evolution of blockchain and the blockchain communities in those countries. So if you're interested to know how blockchain's been growing in Brazil, Israel, Malta, in the UAE, Japan, Canada, Germany, Australia, the Netherlands. These are shows I've been putting together with a whole bunch of different experts and friends. So that's me.
Thank you. Awesome. Yeah. If you don't know Anthony, yes, please check you out, I guess. I was watching your video about how to find a job in Web3, and I think it's very beneficial, especially for people who are just getting more familiar with the space. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not on Twitter technically, so I don't post on Twitter. I don't do anything meaningful on Twitter. So if you're looking to find me, just type in Anthony Day in LinkedIn and hopefully you can find me there.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I was just about to say that. I don't think I've ever seen a person on LinkedIn who is in Web3 and has more followers than you do. our next guest, Inés, we are very excited to hear your background. What do you do? And please tell us some nice words about yourself.
Okay, so hello, everyone. My name is Inés Bragança Gaspar. I am a Portuguese lawyer, and I work at an international law firm called Antas da Cunha Sica. And I specialize in Web3, blockchain, and crypto. I also consider myself to be an active participant of the Web3 ecosystem. I have a couple of personal side projects. I'll also start teaching classes on blockchain, and I enjoy doing research, mostly about DeFi and also decentralized justice. And I'm very happy to be here and to share my my knowledge, both on the legal and regulatory side.
I just want to add that Inês is also a developer, so be careful. She's a lawyer and a developer, so you need to really hide well your information.
What a combination.
Amazing. Amazing. How do we clone you, Inês? How do we make more of you?
Thank you so much for the kind words. I mean, my objective, I've been in the Web3 space for around 4 years now, almost reaching five. And yeah, my goal is to become pretty much a hybrid lawyer, mixing law and technology and programming mostly on Solidity and smart contracts.
Wow, that's an outstanding portfolio. We are so pleased to have you on our podcast. I think
we could
say
badass.
Yes, yes, true, indeed. Okay, our next guest, Jose, is already unmuted. Could you please introduce yourself?
No, yes, am I there?
Yes, and so I can see that you're ready to jump in already.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a bit of a downplay. I think I'm the boring one here on the bench, to be honest. I mean, coming from these portfolios we just saw and knowing Pedro as well. Because I'm actually an historian. That's my background. I'm a comparative contemporary historian. My PhD is in history. I studied, you know, like transitions to fascism, transition to democracy, but always with a keen eye on political institutions, elites, you know, like, and how society can evolve, you know, like from different moments in time. And this was actually what led me to the technology itself, because once I finished my PhD and I started looking what I wanted to do, I was living in Budapest by the time, by the way, I encountered some colleagues. This is in 2017, so we were talking about the ICO bubble, and I met my first two partners where we ran the first startup, going after a crypto in itself. A crypto exchange to a certain extent. But I mean, from that, you know, like seeing blockchain technology and seeing, quote unquote, this machine of truth or potential machine of truth and all the benefits it can bring into the public sector. I mean, Anthony for sure will have something to say on this as well. Immediately, I was hooked in all the possibilities that we can do if integrating, you know, like sex technology in these days in almost all the areas of industry and all the areas of public affairs as well. So my entry is more from a social scientist point of view. I relocated to Lisbon recently as well, not as recently as Anthony, but almost for a year now, where I attached myself into the ecosystem, always with this institutional oversight, if you like. On that note, I was a part, and I'm still a part of the Portuguese Blockchain Alliance. We created now a federation of the associations in Portugal. We call it FACE. And with this, for instance, we try to drive and to present a common portfolio to different stakeholders and to different institutions. One of them, of course, it's the government. I mean, on occasion and timely, for instance, regarding the budget, that is something that is going on, you know, like, and we are debating as we speak, but also other portfolios that we can identify either to foster and to develop the communities here in Portugal. So, I mean, on a nutshell, this is partly what I do. Also, as a consultant, I'm also trying to connect Web2 with Web3. And, well, and other surprises that we can leave it, you know, like for the duration of our talk.
Wow, and that's what nowadays people call a boring portfolio, really?
In Portugal, it is. You should come and meet us. I am the boring guy here.
Oh, wow. Crazy. Great enough. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing. historian and crypto. If you don't have a blog, like, you should start right now. The history is changing. In front of our eyes. Okay. Last but not least, Pedro, the co-host of today's podcast and also the founder of Offchain Lisbon. I'm very excited to meet you. I'm an ex Offchain founder myself. Unfortunately, I moved on and I lost Offchain community from my city. But anyhow, I'm very, very happy that you are here today. And please, the mic is yours. We would love to know everything about you and how you happen to be an Offchain founder in Lisbon.
So thank you, everyone. Thank you for coming today. It's really my pleasure to, you know, to be part of this, you know, growing community. I feel really, really lucky that I landed, let's call it, this job, because You know, actually, I came into to off-chain by accident because I was living in China for, 14 years. And through a friend, I met Jonathan. And Jonathan was saying to a friend of mine, which is Florian, and that we used to work in video games together. And he told us about, you know, the hype and the current situation of Lisbon. He was really looking for someone. And of course, you know, for me, I'm also recently arrived to Portugal about 2 years ago. My background is in video games. I worked about 14 years in video games. The last, I think already six, I had my own video game with a Chinese partner. But previous to that, I worked in Ubisoft and Square Enix in Shanghai. And, you know, it was a really great experience. But when I moved back to Portugal, you know, basically all my friends, you know, and close related people that I knew, everyone changed after 14 years of not being in the country. So with this opportunity that Jonathan gave me, I really saw a way to connect to people that are like-minded, because I don't feel no more really 100% Portuguese. I'm, you know, I'm adapting to a new reality. And one thing I normally tell people, if you normally came to talk to me in off-chain, that I see the energy and the synergy that I used to see when I arrived in China back in 2007. I see so many bright minds coming from different countries. And right now, I really see the potential of Lisbon as a heat spot to combine all these synergies, all these minds, to not only develop the current projects that are already there, but as well create new ideas and as well develop new product all together with all these different minds. An idea, you know, I've been connected closely actually to Inês and José, and soon enough with Anthony. And Inês is one of our first, you know, visitors of off-chain. So she was very, very happy about it. And the idea for us is to develop a community. We want to really easily onboard new people. We want to create a system where people can access easily the resources that we have on hand, or companies that we know that are trusty. It can be a lawyer. It can be a real estate agent. It can be service provider and Web3 agencies, or even events organizations. So our idea here in Lisbon is to use this hype, but also build something that people can use on their daily lives, and as well to teach and, you know, broadcast to even more. So I think as an introduction will be enough, but really, really happy to be part of this community with you guys.
Wow. Thank you so much for a very touching introduction. I think I shed a tear. It's very sweet to see when something grows in front of your eyes and develops and escalates and attracts more and more people. It's very inspiring. Thank you so much, Pedro. I'm very happy that you are one of the off-chainers and one of the people who really sees the value of DeFi. That's wonderful. Okay, finally, let's get to know Lisbon more. When we have our guests here, we already know some things about you. Now it's time, I think, to learn something about the city. So my first question would be to Anthony, because you're not Portuguese, you're coming from Ireland. So could you tell us about your decision to move to Lisbon? And was it company directed, or you just chose Lisbon as your place to leave? And so now you're here, and tell us about your expectation reality crash. Like, was it like you expected, or what did you find there?
Yeah, that's a long and kind of complex question. So, but for those who don't know, I've been a full-time resident in Lisbon. Well, technically Sintra, actually. So we live not out in the city, we live outside in the countryside, and we've been resident here for 1.5 weeks. So 10 or 11 days in total so far. So bear with us, we're still super, super new. But at least once in the last week, if not twice, my wife and I have both said, we're never going to be able to leave, are we? And both looked at each other and said, no, we're not.
That's the spirit. Yeah,
it really is. And okay, yes, we're still in the honeymoon period, and no, we haven't had our first speeding fine or run in with some sort of bureaucratic ministry of any kind yet.
That's what I was going to say.
Wait for it. You wait for it.
It'll come. But for now, I mean, the choice was, I work for a remote organization, so I can work anywhere in the world, which is a real privilege. And I think the last 2 years has really opened up those possibilities to people, which hopefully is a benefit to Portugal or people who are considering moving to Portugal, because we then started saying, well, You know, we live in Dublin in a suburb. We have a very small garden with two young children, age 5 and 7, who really need space, who want to be out and about, and we want to provide them with something different. At the same time, I was coming to Lisbon for work, for meetings anyway. Harity has an office here, it has an office in Berlin, office in London. So that was part of my onboarding experience. And I started speaking to some of the guys who are here, guys from all around the world, not Portuguese, German, Australian, English, Dutch. And they all live here. And I said, is it difficult? Is it complicated? And none of them said they had a hard time. I said, is the language a barrier for getting around? They said, well, we learned some, but also English is quite well spoken. And then that was enough for me to then start looking further and then started looking at, you know, where could we live? What kind of schools were here? There's some amazing schools that are, you know, obviously they have, you have both the international American and British schools, but you also have some more nature-focused schools, Escola da Terra in Azoia,
Jardim
da Terra in Praia das Massas, where our kids go, and they're beautiful, outdoor-based, in nature. Tomorrow, my son is going to spend the whole day at the beach. He's going to have his school day at the beach.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
This is practically impossible in Ireland.
Yeah. You know, well, welcome to Portugal.
I would say most countries in the world. I think that is one of the benefits. And I think, as well, in terms of education, I think there's been some changes. So it's really good that you already have this experience.
For sure. And I would be amiss to not talk about tax, right? So as an expat, having non-habitual residency, 20% tax rate is beneficial. Having the current taxation sort of towards cryptocurrency, you know, a proportion of my salary is based in crypto. I hold crypto, so having a favorable tax rate there is a benefit, which puts Portugal in that category in kind of a comparative set of, you know, the British Virgin Islands and some Caribbean islands somewhere. Probably Germany, if you want to consider that if you hold for longer than a year, you don't pay capital gains. If you consider UAE, and then maybe possibly Singapore as crypto-friendly jurisdictions. I would say Portugal today is more than crypto-friendly. It's crypto-incredibly positive. Whether that changes, we can debate. But for now, in that total package, and since arriving here, we found even more things that further kind of solidify our decision to move here. I've given you an example. I've had more invitations for coffees or beers or to meet for lunch or at the beach from people in Web3 who are, you know, OGs, people with serious projects, people with great credentials and who have really interesting perspectives from all walks of life, from all different disciplines, technology, lawyers, business people, founders. I've had more invitations in 1 week and I had in 7 years in Ireland.
Wow,
and that just
wow.
shows me how much quality and how much diversity is already here, which is amazing. I could keep going, but I'll stop there.
I think it's curiosity, right, Anthony? I think as you have been in crypto for so long, people are truly curious to get maybe a point of view. In some cases, people might be on Web3 or want to transition to Web3. And basically, they just want to hear from experience. You know, what is the trend, how do you do it, or how to get a job, or just get your thoughts on the market in general. I think for what I've been seeing, and I think José Inês can agree, there is a lot of people that are curious. You know, that just yesterday we met some people. Oh, I just moved from Madrid. I don't know anyone. Do you know how I can get a job in Web3? You see, so... I think many people, you know, of course, maybe you have a higher level of contact, but I think many, many people, I feel that they're truly curious about what they need to do to step over. You know, some people think it's really difficult. They think there is some crazy code they need to crack. But in the end, I think you can help us as well to educate most of the people that are coming to this space.
Very, very happy to. The barriers are lower than you think, and there are roles for everybody in every walk of life in Web3. At this point in time, there is nobody with any background that couldn't find a role in Web3. I promise you that.
Well, I can validate that as an historian, if you want to prove the point. And I just wanted to add on this. It's true. I mean, every day, every meetup, we're going to meet somebody that just moved from Berlin, from UK, from London, from Paris, you know, like, and this is something that Lisbon hasn't seen in such a quality of talent, you know, like, in such a quality of investments, VCs, you know, like, new projects coming to brew. And I think we are seeing this every single day. I mean, and if you want to keep your agenda full, I mean, the problem is the opposite. When do you work? You know, like, because again, the opportunity and the energies, you know, like, that you see with such a solidified project, you know, like, and again, as we were saying, people from all walks of life, because it's not just the coders we are talking about. We're talking about marketing people, talking about founders, we're talking about curious. persons that have, you know, like due to COVID as well, you know, like accumulated some wealth, and now they are looking for opportunities to invest and or to get engaged. And they are looking at Web3 exactly at that space to be. And Lisbon as a space, if you like that, is it's kind of like putting it all together. As we had, I would say, in other moments in our history, also such movement, right? When we first started to discover the world. Please bear in mind that Lisbon was the first global city that existed. In the 1500s, I mean, okay, Rome was a big city, but in the Mediterranean. Lisbon, if you look, you know, like and it was in the 1500s and 1600s, you could find already in the city center people from the Indies, people from Brazil, from the Americas, people from Africa. All walking around in the city, when London or Berlin, you know, like or all the big capitals that you see today, were barely villages. So this is part of our DNA.
This is why we have a historian on the show. This is the benefit of having a historian.
You came out with a history lesson and you just listen.
That's wonderful, yeah. In this, in relation to this, I would like to ask Ines, as you are a lawyer, so for people who would like to move to Portugal, how about the nomad visas, and is it possible to get an investment pass or so-called golden pass, and what are the regulations, and does your company mostly work with individuals or with foreign companies who would like to maybe invest and have some legal issues?
Sure, so I will start with your last question first. So as I work for an international law firm, we are present in more than 16 countries. Most of my clients are indeed foreign companies that want to incorporate in Portugal, especially in Lisbon, but also, for example, in Madeira, which is a Portuguese island. But I have been noticing that we have more and more Portuguese entrepreneurs that want to start their own crypto and blockchain companies. Regarding what I do most on my day-to-day basis, we are a full-service law firm. So that basically means that we are able to provide our clients with all sorts of legal services. So like incorporation of a company in Portugal, licensing the company with the Bank of Portugal as an entity that provides virtual asset services. We do tax planning for both companies and individuals. We can take care of hiring of workers, but we also accompany projects in all areas of Web3. So if you want to open a crypto exchange or pursue any other DeFi project, if you want to launch a utility token, a fan token, NFTs, we advise on ICOs, STOs, FTOs. We can also give legal opinions about tokenization of real-world assets, about the use of smart contracts. We can help write white papers, suggest legal wrappers for DAOs, Betaverse project. So just pretty much everything you can imagine. And obviously, we also take care of visas for everyone, and specifically for digital nomads. So here in Portugal, there are lots of visa options. We have, for example, the D7 visa, which is like the passive income visa. We have the startup visa also. It's quite recent and it's to attract tech talent from outside Europe. We have, as Anthony mentioned, and he's one of the beneficiaries of that regime, which is a non-habitual resident regime, which is extremely attractive fiscal regime for foreigners. And then specifically, I would say the most famous visa that Portugal has is the Golden Visa. So the Golden Visa is not exactly a visa. The name misleads a bit. It's actually a residence permit that permits to enter and stay in Portuguese territory for investment purposes. And it's specifically for individuals who are not citizens of any territory forming part of the European Union or of the Schengen area, and they have to meet to benefit from that visa. They have to meet certain requirements that are related mostly to investment, acquisition of property like real estate, and also creating employment. So for everyone that is looking to move to Lisbon, I would suggest that you contact a lawyer before you move, just so you can discuss what's the best type of visa for you. Because sometimes people come here and they think, oh, I want this visa. And then they find out that there is some requirements that they don't meet. So I always advise my clients to talk with a lawyer beforehand, and just talk with also other foreigners that are already living here, and just get to know a bit more info about Lisbon, because I go to a lot of crypto events. There's a crypto event every day of the week, pretty much here in Lisbon. And I meet people that have been here for like 2 days, 5 days, 1 week, 1 month, 6 months. So a lot of people are moving here, and it's definitely a great place. It has a lot of advantages for crypto and Web3 specialists to move here.
Amazing. Speaking about infrastructure, are there places where I can just go into the coffee shop and buy a cup of tea using crypto, or like Bitcoin ATMs or anything as such in the physical world? Like,
I think for now, the only place that I know is the block that you know, that we visit regularly for events and meetups on Friday. There might be more, but not that I use on.
Okay. Yeah, there's also other places like Rush Studios. Also, they accept like near tokens for pizzas. Those are places where crypto events are organized. But I believe there are also some restaurants that already accept Bitcoin. Some coffee shops and all of that. So I think also, Bitcoin ATMs are coming in the near future, I believe, because a lot of crypto exchanges are moving here. So it also makes sense that they also open ATMs.
I will add to this also, I mean, this is not deliberately, but some of the POSs that you can find in some shops actually are able to accept, for instance, Binance Card, right? But I mean, they're not announced as such. So in that sense, in terms of the integration of crypto payments in the, let's say, in the retail, you know, like sector, restaurants and so forth, it's not as disseminated as we can see in other places. This is still something that we can and should be working towards as well.
Yeah, I think you have one company that wants to do the bridge between any project and Fiat, which is Utrust, which are based out of the north. They were bought by a network called Elrond. And I think they already want to create invoicing for companies or for customers using crypto. And they will have like a timeline. You have 30 minutes or 1 hour to make the payment with that rate. And I think Utrust is a company to see, because I think they are doing that. They're connecting the real world to normal businesses.
Yeah, to that. I mean, let me just add on Utrust. They were actually the first ones that did the partnership with Benfica. So you can actually buy, you know, like all the merchandising from Benfica with crypto. And they are trying to integrate more and more, you know, like retail into their own system. So yes, indeed, fine for them. Look for them.
Yeah, and let me also add that in Portugal, you can buy a house with crypto. So actually my law firm with Zoom, which is a real estate company, we were the first ones to make a transaction of a house fully resorting to crypto. So there was no fiat involved. And nowadays you can buy a house in the whole territory of Portugal with Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano, like so many cryptocurrencies. And also my law firm accepts crypto. We have a partnership with Utrust, and we accept crypto for the payment of our fees also. So I believe that more and more companies and more services will also start accepting crypto. It's the only logical way forward.
Yeah, I guess that would be so wonderful to invest into some like shit coins and then buy a house using those money. Amazing. Like, I have some ideas for the next bull right now. I also would like to ask, since we touch regulations, what are the relationship between Portugal and EU based on the... because as I can see in the newsfeed that European Union doesn't really like make big moves about crypto. They are like still talking, and like France looking like to ban it, then not ban it, then yeah, it's they are divided. So how's the relationship between Portugal and European Union on that matter?
Okay, should I go with that? I mean, I can... You need to be a bit more specific when you're talking about crypto. Because if you're talking about crypto or the technology, blockchain or Web3 in particular as well. Regarding, you know, like crypto and the relationships that Portugal has with the EU, I would say that, I mean, two things. One, of course, we follow very closely what's happening in the EU. I'll give the example, for instance, of MiCA. So everybody's looking for to see the implementation and to see what will be the impact of MiCA into the local jurisdictions. So this is something that we've been following. We are working on this, for instance, under the associations, exactly to try to have it ready, an early, either an early adoption or an immediate adoption, you know, like or transposition to Portuguese rule from the taxonomy of MiCA in one hand. But I think it's fair also to say, and this bears also to Anthony's first point of Portugal being this sort of like a crypto haven in terms of taxation in the sense of IRS, we are a bit conservative to a certain extent. Right. So Portugal traditionally is conservative. Attention, it's not just on the crypto issues. AML5, for instance, was one of these cases, or PSD5, sorry, was one of these cases as well. So Portugal usually has this tendency to wait and see. Right. We are not, you know, like fast adopters. We are not on the vanguard sometimes of adoption towards, you know, like new areas of technology. We have, from the institutional point of view, a little bit of a two steps, you know, like pack. I don't know if Inês will agree with me on this. She follows more, you know, like the legal aspects of some of the dimensions that I'm talking here about. But we tend to understand to let others go forward and then also take from their examples, you know, like some of the blueprint for future adoption, which I think it has been, to be fair, you know, like a good decision. Because this is actually one of the reasons why Lisbon also became such a hype, you know, like a place to be. Lisbon, Porto, you know, like Braga, some of all these, you know, like hotspots in Web3 in Portugal. And I think, you know, like we've been trying to have, you know, like a very open dialogue, an active dialogue with governmental institutions, not only to provide them an access, if you like, to a vox populi that is coming from the community itself. So to identify who's here, to identify the features, the characteristics of the whole hype that it's living, you know, like in Portugal, in this area, in one hand, and then try to alert the government for two essentially, you know, like main focus. One, try not to mess it up what we managed to achieve. And second, because most of the community does want to pay taxes, attention, this is not something that people are here in just to avoid taxes, because, you know, like the necessary anticipation for if you like a consolidated tax framework, it's important, you know, like for a lot of businesses and for a lot of investors. So we want that when Portugal will touch, you know, like some of these dimensions, they will know what they are doing. And of course, take into considerations, you know, like where we are placing ourselves in terms of the comparative benchmark in Europe now. Anthony was talking about the Germany. I will also add, for instance, the other example with the flat taxes of Hungary or Slovenia. So we need to understand where we are in terms of how we want to position ourselves into the present and near future.
I see. Thank you for such wonderful input. Anthony is being awfully quiet for some reason. So Anthony, I would like to direct to you and ask, since you're a foreigner who just arrived to Portugal and it's going to be a new life to you, but you already said and your family decided that you're going to stay there. So, and you're very happy that you can meet lots of different people. But how about the language barrier? Have you like ever felt that you're missing out on something because you don't speak Portuguese?
I think it depends on your individual mindset. I've been lucky in my life. I've traveled to about 120 countries, and most of those countries, I didn't speak the native language. I have French and German from school. I have a little bit of Spanish. I lived in Chile for a few months, so I picked up Spanish language locally. I lived in Russia for a year, so I speak a little bit of Russian, and so I'm used to reading an alphabet that isn't completely familiar. I think you've just got to be patient with yourself. Honestly, you're never going to be fluent overnight, but you can get a long way with just a phone and your hands. These days, we have Siri that can help to do translations for us. And, you know, at other times I've also found that English is incredibly widely spoken. You know, you ask in kindness with a smile on your face, "Falas inglês?" And somebody says, makes that kind of not really face. And then you end up having a completely fluent conversation in English the whole time. there's great humility, but great competence in people's local use of English language as well. So from a personal perspective, I could pick up a newspaper, and with some knowledge of French, English, and German or Latin languages, I can probably get half of it. As I said, you know, speaking, I can probably give instructions, but listening, that's going to take some more time.
I think since we have a big boom in terms of tourism here in Portugal over the last 5 years, you know, I was out for many years, and every time I would come back is the any service provider, either in the restaurants or in the street, a lot of people develop their English skills. They already has a base because we never doubled the movies or things like that, which helps the population to have a good ear. But I really saw a big evolution of the level of English over the last 5 years because of this, basically Portugal and Lisbon, especially being on the map of so many people that come here on the weekend or just big holidays. So I really saw a big, big evolution on that.
For sure. I think, I mean, things like registration or completing residency permits and stuff like that. In those cases, what I do is I have my lawyer help. So either we arrange to go together or we talk about it beforehand. He prepares me on what's going to happen and then we see how it goes. But, for something that's going to be more than just a quick transactional conversation, it helps to have some help. But also at the same time, I mean, I could have asked a friend to come with me, or I'm sure had I put out a flare to the community saying, look, guys, I'm really struggling. Can somebody, as a Portuguese speaker from the off-chain community, join me for an hour? I need to do X. I'm sure I would have got some help as well. So it's the last thing to think of as a barrier moving here, honestly.
Yeah, great. Because right now I live in Thailand and sometimes I struggle that I cannot connect with local people. For some reason, in Thailand, people don't really speak English as widely spoken as in Malaysia or Philippines. Mm. And I was also living in China for 4 years. And I'm very used to being able to communicate with locals with no problems. So yeah, sometimes it's here, it's a bit depressing, I guess, that I really cannot connect on a very friendly human level, but meaningful level, I guess. But anyhow, Ines, you were saying that you have some connections with universities, and I would like to ask if there are some courses in Portugal that are teaching the courses about blockchain, or they're mostly just engineering courses, and how's the educational industry look like?
Yeah, so the courses that I personally teach, they are non-technical courses. So one of them is for high levels of companies, so like executives that just want to learn how to implement blockchain technology in their own companies or consulting companies, technology companies, a lot of different areas. And the other one is more for like law students, lawyers, people that work in the legal departments of companies or banks. So I think it's like super important to have these types of courses because, well, I believe that Web3 is going to need all sorts of professionals. So it's also super important to have these courses to be able to onboard different professionals into the Web3 ecosystem. On the technical part, since I have also have my own startup and I have to hire some solidity developers, I noticed that there is like a big gap between all the companies that are looking to hire people and the actual talent that is available. So I believe that in the near future, we will have more coding boot camps just for Web3. I know that some are being created, and I know that universities, more like engineering universities, are trying to make a lot of efforts to add like Solidity or other programming languages to their curriculum so that we can pretty much bridge this gap, this technical gap.
Yeah, I can give also an example. So our company that I work as a day job, which is Near You, is a service provider for outsourcing services, and which belongs to a big group called Mungi. So these days, since I'm starting basically to increase our Web3 kind of department, so we started already to have internal studies as well, trainings and multiple aspects. And our idea as well with some of the partners that actually are here in this podcast is in the future to have some of the chains to basically come with their knowledge and help us to train developers on the technology. It can be the different technologies or the mainstream technologies, to have a bigger output of developers into the market and then help these companies to have enough workflows to develop products.
Okay, let me also jump on this to reinforce a bit what both Pedro and Inês were saying and identifying, but this is not a Lisbon, or Portugal per se. This is there are a lack of Web3 developers, full stop. And I think this is a gap that should be tackled into the near future. I'm also working with other universities, Inês and so forth, because I think a lot of the offer is kind of like short course, 21 hours, 40 hours, but they are short to the deepness, of some of the requirements that we need to fall through in order to bring, more and more talent specifically to Web3, right? Even the marketing, tools, all of that, is still something that I still feel that we have a path to follow through. But luckily, we are bringing so much talent and so much interest into the city. I will say it's a matter of months, that we start having, more and more these offers. Because as Pedro was saying, a lot of companies are already doing these things internally. A lot of industrial associations, which I'm working with, they're super interesting, and doing these webinars, short courses. So this kind of like first onboarding into the whole world of Web3, right? So to jump, to go back to a certain extent from Web3 to Web2. And I think this is quite visible. Recently, for instance, I was putting forward a bid, an application for this PRR, which the ones in Europe will know that this is like a post-COVID recovery fund that is coming from the EU. Portugal has different lines open. One of them was for the testbed network here in Portugal, and we created a bid where our services offered were essentially Web3. But in building up the consortium, and I was the person that was putting all these companies together, we had, I would say, maybe 10-15% of Web3 native companies. All the rest are from all walks of life. Talking about training companies, law firms, you're talking about somebody that has, satellites in space, so all different, walks of life, I was contacting these companies. And the whole idea is to bring them into our testbed, network and have pilots, a POC, an MVP on Web3. And I have to say that the conversion rate from everybody that I talked to was around 95%. So this displays an interest, you feel like, from quote unquote, regular companies from different businesses to jump into Web3 product. Either if it's an NFT, project or a metaverse project or something with IoT or even some AI, all of this under a blockchain, of course, we can see that is a huge, I'm not saying demand per se, but at least an interest, to start getting into this sort of quote-unquote real life, project. And I think we're going to see this more and more into the future. Government is also making a stance on this. So we're going to see more and more adoption, more and more offer from the academical and pedagogical point of view. And hopefully we will manage, to put all this big network that we are witnessing now leaving and coming to Lisbon and Portugal, ultimately, to participate actively into what we want to have as an industry cluster to a certain extent. And I think it's really hyped to be in Portugal at this moment to see all this through. Every time I'm speaking, nobody intervenes with me. Hello?
It's because no one's got anything else to say. It's like, well, that's it.
Come on, Anthony.
At least on the topic.
Exactly. You get very, very complete answers, Jose. It's very difficult to meet you in when you're
I need to take my academical hat. I see that.
I think it's an interesting topic, though, in terms of who should be here, or how do we encourage the transition? Let's just start with entities or people in Portugal, right? Because the entry point into Web3 is so diverse. Like Inés was saying, that it could just be that there's a student or a developer who's looking to change career, or who's looking to build up coding or architecture skills focused on decentralized technology, because the opportunity for them then is very, very broad. I guess also as somebody who is Portuguese working for Portuguese companies, maybe the economic opportunities are slightly more limited. So if you're Portuguese with a global mindset working on technology that can be global, I think you've got an opportunity to level up there. I think then you've got existing opportunities with layer ones, layer twos that have offices here, or where you can connect to the community here. You can build applications on layer ones. Not everybody needs another layer one. Not everybody has to launch their own chain. And mm-hmm. and the Web 2.5 story, I think, is an interesting one. And Inés, I'd love to hear your kind of perspective on how many of the people that you speak to genuinely really need to use decentralized technology or genuinely could benefit from it. Because I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody about the kind of national blockchain infrastructure in China. We were talking about Alastria as a combination
as a comparison. And at the time, it felt a little bit like, okay, well, you're creating a distributed public sector computing network. It's not a public blockchain. It doesn't have its own token. It doesn't have shared economic security with proof of stake. But you do at least get some benefit from having a single source of truth between entities that you know and trust with proof of authority. And yes, from a digital transformation perspective, you created something better. Have you created a public, permissionless, global, borderless means for sharing messages and transactions? No, you absolutely haven't. And not every company is going to benefit from decentralization, right? There are a lot of intermediaries. Try selling blockchain to estate agents, right? They thrive on data disparity, right? They do not want transparency. So don't try selling too much blockchain to real estate. Although digital assets and digitization of physical assets, different story. Not every Web2 business or not every traditional business needs to be in the metaverse. Not every business needs an NFT. You can't tokenize everything all of the time, or at least you need to have a clear and well thought through reason to know why and to what end. Because in some cases, just the business transformation around working with Web3, you know, just imagine you've got a finance team of 2.5 people or maybe 1.5 people. And now all of a sudden you're having to include into their workload management of multi-sig wallets, hardware wallets, the reporting around crypto transactions, et cetera, right? The amount of compliance overhead as well. If you're a small business, that's going to cripple your team, or it's at least going to add overhead cost, which for the benefit you get out the other side may not necessarily be worth it. So I'd love to hear, Inish, is that appropriate use, or does that resonate with you in any way?
Yeah, so I'm going to add my 5 cents to this. On the classes that I teach, I start explaining what blockchain technology is, and I also explain what it isn't. And we also present some frameworks for companies to decide if they actually need to use blockchain or not. Because, most of the times, they will come to the conclusion that it's super expensive and inefficient, at least for now, to use blockchain. And they just want to, like, put out to the public and come out in the news saying, this company is now using blockchain technology. So they're just using it mostly for, like, marketing purposes. Regarding my own clients, when they are sure that they want to do blockchain based projects, sometimes what I notice is that they try to add like all the recent trends. So, I mean, if metaverse is the trend that is booming right now, they also want to enter the metaverse. If it's NFTs, they want to like launch NFTs. And sometimes I have to get them to like take a step back and just tell them, hey, you don't need all of this. Let's just focus on like the core and let's just work from that. So yeah, I definitely noticed that a lot of companies want to do a lot of things related to blockchain. And sometimes, yeah, it's not necessary. And I'm a big fan of your podcast, especially of the title, because I think it definitely like illustrates that blockchain's most of the times is not needed.
Yeah, and you're right. And the education part, I think we've probably done blockchain 101 to death by now. I think, and Jose, this is probably going to resonate with you, is the idea of decentralization. It's a technical one, it's a philosophical one, and it's a commercial one in all three ways. And so actually, when you think about architecting your technology systems in a decentralized way, or architecting your community in a decentralized way, or offering products and services that are managed on a decentralized architecture, that's actually a very big shift. If your commercial model, if your reporting systems, if the way the market looks at you, if you're a listed company, decentralization is fundamentally against the way that you are geared for growth and for the way that you present profit. And so it's a really big mindset shift. But I still don't think the commercialization of Web3 has been taught well yet.
On this, I agree. Go, Paulina, sorry.
No, sorry, Jose, please continue.
No, I wanted to agree here, you know, like both with Inés and also, of course, now with Anthony. I do think that a lot of companies are trying to get, you know, like a stamp to say that they are in the field. I think this is clear. Again, this is not a Portuguese, you know, like phenomenon per se, quite the opposite. And I think it bears on us. And I give you a straightforward example. I mean, I remember starting to talk
more openly, let's say, with either future clients, partners, in like institutions, like for 3-4 years now. And if back in the day, I will tell them the benefit that they can use. But let's give an example of supply chain, which is an example that you can use, you know, like it's sort of solidified already. And when you go to them and you say, like, okay, so let's, you want to create your own blockchain? Very well. You know, like put $1 million, you know, like talk to me in 6 months to a year and then see how the R&D goes. I mean, of course, they will look at you and say, you're crazy. Right? Mm-hmm. Or you go for European funds, you know, like, okay, let's go into these funds, you know, like, let's go to this PRR or the H2020 or the H2030. And you go into this sort of like, you know, like R&D projects, which again, can take you a couple of years, you know, like to get to any point. This, of course, you know, like will mean that the market itself could shift. The industry itself can advance. So I don't know, like I was giving you this example of the land registration. We were talking about this as well. If you want to look at the earlier projects, either from Sweden or from Georgia, they don't consider it or contemplate NFTs, which is actually something that, you know, like you should use, you know, like if you want to have a land registration project today. It's not the same, you know, like pictures that you were doing, you know, like under the purview of how technology was in 2016, 17, 18. Same goes with Mika, as you know, that NFTs just today, actually, the latest formulation of the text came out. We are analyzing it now to see how the NFTs were involved or not, because I think this was part of what was missing. But DeFi is not there, and we all know that it's not there. So again, you know, like every time that you try to have a more consolidated institutional legal framework, which takes its time, attention, this necessarily needs to take its time, the technology jumped again, one or two steps, right? And this, to the market, I think it gives them a little bit of, a suspicious, you know, like overlook in one hand. And then, of course, we also need to do our DD properly. This is something that I've been extremely focused, because sometimes you are engaging in projects, they have the hype, sometimes they have the funding, but you know what? They don't have the product. They're either building up, they're trying to understand where they want to go, they're changing, you know, like L1s, you know, like left and right. And this also doesn't give a trust to the market itself, right? So I think it's extremely important that we know, you know, like from the ecosystem, you know, like on its own, you know, like who is producing what, which technologies are, which problems they're trying to solve, you know, like which protocols they are using, so on and so forth. And this is something, you know, like this, actually I'm giving, you know, like some job opportunities, right? Because I think, you know, like this sort of like surveillance into the ecosystem is still something that it also needs to be done from our end. Because for instance, again, you know, like when I keep having these conversations with, let's say, leads or potential clients, now, for instance, I try to have, you know, like solid partnerships with providers that I know that they are solid into the ecosystem itself. Either that be, you know, like tokenization of real estate, can be, you know, like NFT providers, can be DeFi or so forth, you know? And this is something that also we need, we that we are in the ecosystem, we that we are voicing the ecosystem itself, also need to have, you know, like in extreme, you know, like attention. Because otherwise, you know, like you can be selling a project that it's just like, whatever, born now or 1 or 2 years, you know, like of growth, but actually it will not survive, you know, like winter.
Yeah.
So, you know? So and we cannot... Yeah,
go ahead.
I just had
an overview. For example, I'm trying to have a friend of a friend to go more towards Web3, and for him, he still thinks everything is very strange, because he still, most of the projects are only based on hype of words, and if he thinks about sustainability as well, profitability, he sees most of the cases are not there yet. So it could be interesting maybe to go early on projects, like many were on Facebook, but on many institutional investors in their mind, which if they don't have a very strong background or they don't follow so closely Web3, they're still very skeptical to invest in most of the projects, because they don't know where they will end up. And what we see, many projects, they're going to go from grants to grant from different layers, layer ones, to keep surviving. But I think in some ways good that we are in bear market, because anything that moved over the last, let's call it 18 months, would make money. But, you know, even if we talk about, my background is video games, if we talk about these blockchain games, and all of these blockchain games have fundamentally a problem. You know, they were giving crazy amounts of rewards to players that were earning their salaries based on playing each game and per day. But in terms of sustainability, if there's no hype, there is no new money coming in. So there is it's not sustainable on the long term. So I think the new generations of game need to really think deeply about that, you know. I was present when we had the big change of premium games to free to play. It was very challenging to have a, you know, to find out a sustainable model. And I think right now we are on the verge as well, in terms of gaming as well, to discover a good formula that is sustainable, right? That might give rewards to users, but it needs to be, it needs to be considered in the balance.
Yeah, I mean, saying this, I mean, just a quick top up, you know, like at least these days when I talk about blockchain, people don't ask me to buy Bitcoin. You know, like this is, I think, has been a fundamental change over the last few years. I remember talking and addressing whatever political officials, you know, like companies and so forth. And I wanted to talk to them about blockchain technology. They always ask me, are you selling crypto? How can I buy crypto? How do you think crypto is going to be? Namely Bitcoin, right? So I think, you know, like at least, you know, like we were able to bring some more awareness into the field that people are, I mean, I would say, like they are really looking to see, you know, like more real life examples come to fore. As I was talking today, I had a meeting earlier on. And I think, you know, like we should stop talking about the technology because, I mean, let's face it, you know, like people will not care if it's blockchain technology that it's underneath, you know, like whatever app they're using. They want to see a good app solving some problems or give them some whatever leisure or whatnot. This is the fundamental issue that we need to move. I mean, nobody knows how the internet works. Everybody knows how to get into the internet and then be served on the internet itself. But which protocol it's using, not using, what it's doing behind the scenes, nobody cares. Nobody knows, right? And I think this is something also that we should start to shift, you know, like you. Every pitch that you see from the field, or most of the pitches you see from the field, are done from within the bubble and towards the bubble itself, right? Yeah, go. Please interrupt me.
And anything to add?
Again, I think you've pretty much covered it. But again, with all of these projects, you've got to make sure that you're seeing sustainable economics. This is fundamental to every digital transformation, right? As somebody who's worked in strategy and technology for 20 years, a lot of the feasibility of what we're building hasn't changed. How the economic models work have changed, right? So if you look at tokens or if you look at the evolution of token price, supply and demand, it mirrors global macroeconomics and exchange of currency. But it requires a slightly different type of modeling. So back to the gaming industry, right? Let's use your example. In the gaming industry, you know, companies have been building game economics, looking at the value, the drop rates of different items or packs and so on for decades. And actually, gamers are really good at modeling those things. And then because it's a game, you can tweak those things or you can patch them, release updates over time. Can't patch a smart contract. So that becomes a little bit more difficult. It's a lot harder to patch a blockchain. It's taken how many years for the merge in Ethereum 2.0 to move from proof of work to proof of stake? Now, some networks like Polkadot, where you can do forkless upgrades and where you have the kind of generation 3 blockchains where those things can be improved upon and you can make hot patches to what's happening to improve or flex the functionality of a blockchain. Different story, right? I think that becomes super important. But again, the fundamental thing that I wish everybody would take away from how to get into blockchain or how to work with blockchain is understanding the economics of digital transformation.
I second that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just would like to say that we've been online for an hour already. And I think before we finish, I would like to ask maybe one or two questions from the public, first come, first serve. So if you're actively listening to us, please, if you have any questions, raise your hand and feel free to ask personally any of the speakers here. Or you can ask a broad question and then our speakers will choose themselves if they want to answer it. Thank you. And while you're thinking about the questions, I would also like to add that off-chain is all about the community. And I am sure there are some people who are developers, who are investors, who are NFT artists and traders. So please, let's follow each other, retweet, and like each other's posts so we can grow the community together. Thank you so much. Let's see if we have any questions.
Yeah, I think as well, just to add up on off-chain Lisbon, we want to take a very community-driven approach. So we are more than open to get feedbacks from you guys about what type of events you want, right? I was thinking about having a maybe off-chain during the day. You know, we go all to a co-working space and instead of being drinks and end of the day, we could, you know, maybe all go together for the ones that want to join to go to a co-working space and just work there together. And so we really appreciate, feedback from you guys as well. Me and Jose, especially Jose, is we're trying to put together a shared folder with companies' information. So people that want to, you know, that want to talk to each other or know businesses, we'll have this folder for you guys to know about other companies as well.
That's a great idea to do it globally. make a big off-chain folder when people can just drop their information, where do they work, what are they looking for. And we have off-chain jobs group in our Telegram. There are more than 1,000 people already. So if you're looking for a job, I highly recommend you to go there, and they post every day. I'm sure you can find something that will suit your expectations. Not you, Pedro. I mean the public.
I know. Actually, we already did it with founders. So we already have this internally with the top founders of different cities to see how they want or what kind of help they need or what they can offer. And I think my idea is, not yet talking to Jonathan, I wanted to create a DAO where we could have for Portugal as a start, as a test bed, to see if we could create a database of all this information, and people can filter by genres, by activities. So basically kind of creating the yellow pages of the community, so they can serve themselves, and maybe we can then have a rating about the people content or the people's company to have a decentralized kind of folder for everyone.
That would be great. Since we don't have any questions from the public, I would like to ask the last questions. What do you think we can do, maybe not right now, but in the near future, as the community for the industry? Because I know that everybody has enthusiasm, but maybe people just don't know where to channel it. So what is the thing that we really should look out for? Should we support the projects with real utility? Or should we just trade more actively, or shall we educate more people? Or, as you say, we don't actually need so much education because nobody understands the internet, but everybody uses it, right? So what we need really is a good product. But I do think from my standpoint that in the very beginning, we do need to educate people. And that's why I think off-chain is a really great community, because me personally, I started my journey in crypto through off-chain, and it helped me to find a job and change my lifestyle completely. So I would like to hear your thoughts about that.
Just sorry to interrupt. Someone is saying that they cannot add questions. That's what I heard. Yeah. So I think it's in the, someone maybe mentioned, maybe we need to add on the comments, right? That's how we can read the question, right?
Yeah. So speaker, they can request, sorry, you can request and I will unmute you because I cannot really invite anybody from here, or you can drop a comment. Yeah. So because I don't see any messages at the moment, or you can also write a DM to off-chain, because I'm seeing the chat right now.
Was this a time now? Is the new flash coming
That's me messing with the soundboard.
Okay. I thought you had groundbreaking news.
Let me ask John. I think John is on the audience. Do you want to ask something, John? I think he was sending me a message. I just wanted to voice maybe his question. Okay, so nothing to add. Okay, sorry.
Let me see. You can hear me?
Let me pick up on you, Paulina, then, I can try to have, like a little of my two cents on this.
Can you hear me?
I think we have, I mean...
Yes.
Okay, nice. Everybody has a button. They need to request if they want to ask some question and to be like a presenter instead of only a listener. That's why everybody needs to do the questions like this. But anyway, I will use this opportunity to, first of all, congratulate you all for this initiative, because it's a very interesting topic, and everybody was completely digging into it and shared so many different talks. So thank you for that in the first place. And probably doing the same question that you guys were doing right now, does it make sense that off-chain creates a different type of events where instead of having like the usual meetup where everybody wants to go there, trying to do some networking and have a beer and whatever, it's because if you're focused more on the community, it's one thing, but you need to focus probably more on professionals, on your particular case, on developers. So that means that maybe the kind of event should be more focused in, let's see if we can create like a Python station, a C++ station, and digging a very an event very focused on developers in the first place, or that kind of event could have a second part where the networking is a mix between devs and companies that really want to see what kind of professionals they have there and what kind of opportunities they can find in order to have a little bit of a step into the Web3 world. I don't know. I'm just sharing the talk, but please give me your answer. Or
like a job fair, right? Like a job fair.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
You have a standee of each company. You come and you apply.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a good idea in terms. What you're maybe asking is maybe make a mini hackathon, which there's already some chains that actually do. What I think is off-chain, we should not incentivize one chain. We incentivize all chain. But actually, we have some partners, you know, talking about Algorand and Near as well, which we are trying to work with them because they have a bigger base here in Portugal. And we actually want to have a direct information from them. And maybe in the future, we actually could create in partnership with them, because it would be good to have someone from this change that can come with a technology background that could support or help, you know, because maybe not every developer is an expert on the area. Maybe he wants to be part and needs some help. And I think for sure, I think it's a wonderful idea, and we can try to develop, you know, we have some partners that we've been talking to actually do this kind of things. They do more on the educational side than just doing an event and having a drink and do, networking. So I think it's a very good point, and we should talk about it and try to make it happen for sure.
Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me reinforce what Pedro was saying. We are actively working on this, also with other communities and also with different formats. I mean, even yesterday there was a co-working / workshop, you know, like meetup in Porto, right? So we are taking steps on this exactly because we identified what you were saying. You know, like meetups are okay, especially for newcomers. So people who don't know, you know, like the ecosystem, they just arrived in Lisbon, and you know, like for Anthony, quote unquote, you know, like to a certain extent. But then we also want to build. We want to transform this energy into some positive, you know, like projects, of course, right? And I think we are brewing, you know, like this sort of like industry overlook to a certain extent. For instance, I finished this presentation I did for Near last week. Which kind of like sums it up. I mean, if you want to be perceived as an industry, we should act like industries do. And if you want to identify Web3 as an industry of extremely added value and as an engine for development, both from the social point of view, from the professional point of view, from the financial point of view, we need to organize ourselves more and more here in Portugal in this sense, but I mean globally as well. Because sometimes what we see is this kind of like a scattered, you know, like clusterized ecosystems where everybody is doing their things with their own, so on and so forth. And we need to start identifying this in the first moment. This is what we are currently doing. Engaging ourselves, you know, like, of course, with the necessary and reliable partners, a bit, you know, like what Antonio was saying as well. And then, of course, you know, like we all have a common platform, which is adoption, right? And awareness and education. So with this common portfolio, move forward, you know, like together. I mean, each one, of course, you know, like keeping their own projects, you know, keeping their own identity, but having all these commonalities that are very much attached. And here I wanted to say another two things, you know, like one, I call it the walleting, you know, like effect of the approach, which means that you need to onboard more and more people into Web3. In this case, if either we need the wallets that are around, then we need to onboard people into having crypto, to having wallets, so on and so forth. I think this is fundamental. And the second thing, with all due respect to the developers out there, I think we should also try to foster, you know, like multidisciplinary teams. And I give you an example. I mean, I also come from a political science background. Okay, the historian as well. And like this allows me, for instance, to see me and my colleagues, of course, when you look at DAOs or you look at governance, you know, like inside projects. And I often see that, you know, like most of the teams are deprived of a social scientist that could be extremely useful when you're trying to create, you know, like a DAO. This is something I've been talking often, you know, like recently. Because I see, you know, like people putting a DAO together, you know, like, okay, so what about your governance system? This is a constitution. It's the same process as a constitution. You need to have rules, who votes, doesn't vote, how are the tickets, you know, like what is the time frames for vote, all of these, you know, like people in my field, you know, like constitutionalists, you know, like political science are doing studies on this for decades. So you should actually onboard, you know, like all this, you know, like knowledge also into the project, you know, like and integrate, you know, like more pieces, you know, like of this sort of like talent-based, you know, like communities, right? And this is something we're also working here up. You know?
Yeah. And on the sense as well for the future, And thanks to Jose, because he was in touch of with most communities. So we're basically trying to create an alliance to create a future event, a meaningful event made in Portugal, not made by Portuguese, but made in Portugal with people from all different industries which have communities and want to keep building. And we want to have, you know, a different approach, not only community learning speeches, but as well building. And that's what we are aiming, and we're putting these forces together to start to create maybe a presentation to get sponsors, and then create kind of a bigger event made by us, so we can onboard, we can educate, and can share knowledge as well, right, Jose?
Yeah. This is exactly where we're standing these days. And Anthony, I think we're going to give you a shot on this as well, since you are a newcomer. You know, like we want to have your insight on this.
In terms of what more can we do as a community?
Yeah. In order to see, and also what you can bring, you know, like to all this roadmap to a certain extent.
And as well as a very young community, like we are in Portugal, right? Everyone is started since Solana last year. That was the breaking point, as we can say.
Yeah. No, but even Polkadot, you know, like I think it's quite interesting, you know, like also to see what you guys are sitting on this.
Yeah, I think generally if we're trying to talk about having a community, which we should be about solving problems that we all have collectively, or that many can benefit from. So what are the biggest things that we're struggling with? Is it about, like you've mentioned already, getting people into jobs? Or is it about trying to solve or address technical challenges? Or is it about just providing a very warm welcome into Lisbon, right? Do we see ourselves as solving Web3 problems, or do we see ourselves as solving Portugal problems? And I know the answer is probably somewhere in the middle of that. As a local community that can act locally, you know, I think if we can try and solve issues that people here are struggling with in Portugal today, that'd be a nice place to play. Whether that's elevation of people who are doing great work, whether that's helping people to find home here and a community here, or helping people from Portugal to engage with an international community and then benefit from their experience, you know, to give them more of a rounded view. Maybe it's still on a roof terrace drinking beer, but at least the content that goes into that sessions looks a bit different.
No, I mean, definitely. I mean, and as you were saying, you know, like this is a 360 approach. Now, what we should do is, again, you know, like put us together and strategize. I think, strategizing, I think it's one of the key elements here as well. You know, like to try to bring all these pieces together. And again, you can start with a rooftop beer, you know, like, but then you can, you know, like in a couple of weeks, you know, like upskilling your coding skills, for instance, right? And this is a pathway, you know, like that I think we are sufficiently nurtured, you know, like with the ecosystem around, that we can see, you know, like some fruitful, you know, like concrete, if you like, solutions and organizations to a certain extent, you know, like in the incoming months. You know, like this, I can totally see it happening. I mean, it is happening by now already. Because as Pedro was saying, we're talking with different partners, with different, you know, like protocols that are already based here in Portugal, right? I mean, I don't know, Anthony, if you have had the opportunity. I was trying to get, you know, like some of our colleagues from that field. But I mean, a lot, or probably the majority of the Web3, you know, like Ukrainian community just moved into Portugal, right? I mean, unfortunately, due to the current events, you know, like back home. But I mean, since they are here and they do want to stay here as well, you know, like we have been, you know, like not only touching base, you know, like, but integrating, you know, like very substantially, you know, like especially around the near ecosystem. You know, like last week, I don't know if you were able to go there. We had a NearCon, and if you were there, like you saw, you know, like how so you saw, you know, like how vibrant, you know, like the whole ecosystem is, not only near, but I mean, the vibe that you see it in Lisbon around this community, right? And again, it's not like Solana, they touch and go, you know, like they came here, they were like, whatever, they have their own, you know, like a grants to distribute, you know, like they can have their hackathons, you know, like their workshops, so on and so forth, but eventually they will leave. Right, I mean, their presence is not as a median run, you know, like as you can see, you know, like some of these, but not only protocols, but I mean, consolidated companies and projects that just moved recently to Portugal. This is a huge advantage now as well, because they're here to stay and they're here to develop their product, right?
Yes, and so I think the more we're solving local Portuguese problems with a community that's based in Portugal, the more impact I think we'll feel, and we'll feel like we're doing good work. Obviously, we're all tethered to the bigger, wider global Web3 community, which is why we're all doing this, right? We sense that it's something bigger than ourselves. But if we can be global but help local, maybe that is the play.
Yeah, but I mean, Portugal in that sense is... Sorry, Pauline.
Sorry,
no, I just wanted to say, like, Portugal, you know, like, it's a very, it's a very interesting, you know, like, test base, because, you know, like, it's a small country, you know, like, super internationalized by definition. I was already mentioning this. And I mean, not only Web3, but I mean, Portugal had traditionally been a place to test product because we are so well connected internationally that everything we do here, it's already thinking internationally. It's impossible for us not to do so. It's the opposite, right? So it's a very but nice like to, test bed. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, but this is Jonathan. I'd like to ask a question. So I want to understand, you know, the government is how much are they really appreciating this new opportunity? Are they like, this is really important and they're going to, you know, make sure there's no impediments? Or is it going to be like a Bangkok or wherever where they're like, okay, this year we're good, but next year we're going to tax everybody. So there's going to be a, you know, a stop and a start.
This is for me. I'll be political in this. Yeah. I mean, number one, we have to bear in mind, we have a new government, right? So we just came from elections back in, I think, April or May. So we have a new government. Some of the key figures, you know, like were replaced, namely the, we had a Secretary of State dealing with digitalization, right? We had Andrea Aragão Severo. He did a very, very interesting work, you know, like on looking at Web3, looking at blockchain. He started actually a group, a working group. I was a part of that on blockchain strategy for Portugal. I actually wrote about this like 2 years ago. We have a new Secretary of State coming from Brussels, actually. So he's not so well connected yet, you know, like with the Portuguese ecosystem. So we're having meetings with them, you know, like in order again to consolidate such a relationship, you know, like with the new holder of this portfolio. I think very soon, I cannot really expand myself much on this, we're going to see more and more use cases coming with the chancellery of the Portuguese government per se. But I was just mentioning now all the PRR projects, for instance, that are coming with these European grants. There's a lot of Web3, you know, like products there, right? So I think we're going to see in the near future more and more availability of such awareness and such, you know, like projects to be in one hand. Regarding taxation, I mean, I think it's going to be inevitable to say that Portugal is going to tax, you know, like in any way. I was mentioning before that we are working closely with the rightful institutions in order that when this happens, they are sufficiently informed, both from the technical point of view, what is taking, what is, you know, like, what are the different protocols and so forth. So what are we talking about when we're talking about taxation per se? But also they have, you know, like a strong connection with the voices that are coming from the community. So we can say what is expected to a certain extent from the new residents that just came to Portugal and what is, you know, like in the other side of this coin, what is the threshold where people will just leave immediately to a certain extent, as you've seen actually happening in other countries, as you know, right? So I think, you know, like government is aware of this, not only myself, but other colleagues, we are responsible to, on a constant basis, raise the awareness level, you know, like inside governmental spheres. But to be fair as well, but this again, it's a bit across the board, especially at European terms, we don't have that many politicians advocating publicly for Web3. Right. But then again, I'll give you an example. I talked last year or a year ago or more with the head of the German blockchain strategy. I was doing some research on how do they build their own strategy. Of course, this is Germany, right? Which means that they are a part of G7, you know, like they are, you know, like a big economical power. That, for instance, when Libra came forth, immediately they have to have a political and technical answer to this. This implies that the technical service inside the institutional structures have to prepare briefings, have to prepare reports, have to prepare, you know, like whatever bullet points and talking points to the politicians. And also the politicians had to be briefed in everything regarding Web3, right? Or in this case, blockchain or crypto. In a Portuguese case, of course, you know, like we are not a country that has this visibility of Germany. But still, I asked it, and I finished with this. I asked him, okay, very well, I understand all this. But from the political point of view, how many of your MPs in the Bundestag, you know, like are actually Web3 native, understand anything about blockchain, so on and so forth? And he was telling me three in Germany, which, as you can imagine, is not a big number considering they have more than 600, you know, like members of parliament. So we should not also expect that just because Portugal and Lisbon is living in a hype, I think the awareness level is more and more, you know, like visible, but we are still deprived to a certain extent of these, you know, like flag carriers that are coming from the political spectrum. And partly of the justification is the political routine in itself, meaning that most of the holders of offices have huge portfolios to attend and need to have this kind of like daily politicking, you know, like a stand on issues and on topics. So it's not like they have, you know, like the focus on Web3. They have, you know, like a wider focus and, you know, like on events. And then, of course, they also want to see us to a certain extent and check us out and see where do we stand also, you know, like whatever, regarding products that we are putting, regarding now like the crash in the market, so on and so forth. So we still need to build up more, you know, like this kind of like integrated network of trust you know, like with different stakeholders and the politicians. The media, for instance, is also another good example on this, you know. And this kind of like, if you want to reflect a little bit the responsibility that us acting here, at least publicly and vocally in the space, have exactly, you know, like in order to, you know, like integrate more, you know, like all these different stakeholders that are still distrusting us. So we need to prove them. Again, I go back to my earlier comment, you know, like that we are an industry today and to be.
Good point. Okay.
Shit, I feel like I'm doing this speech. I don't know, whatever. Like, you kill me every time I speak.
It's good. Inez and Anthony, anything else to add just for us to wrap it up?
Yeah, I mean,
Nothing more to say.
Yeah, I think José just told everything that people needed to know. So.
Shit. I need to rethink my position in podcast.
No. You're inspiring. I think you're inspiring a logical way, which is true. We need to have the government more a part of the community. They need to see the results. And I think very importantly, we need, I think what Anthony mentioned, we need to solve Portuguese
real
problems
life issues.
Real life issues to prove them that actually has a great, great utility for everyone.
Yeah, I think that nails it.
Yes.
And on that note, guys, I want to say a big thank you for the kind invitation. I want to say thank you for the warm welcome. Looking forward to meeting many of you in person as I'm out and about in Lisbon. As I said, a week and a half in, we've pretty much just about figured out how to live outside of our suitcases now. We officially registered this morning. We went to the municipal offices, so we're now officially registered as residents of Portugal with the municipality of Sintra. And with all of that admin out the way, I can get on to the important matters of doing my day job in blockchain and meeting the rest of you guys whenever I can. So thank you so much for such a warm welcome, and very, very excited to be here.
Thank you so much for coming.
Bem-vindo, António. Bem-vindo, Anthony.
Obrigado a todos.
I am just translating your name as well. I don't know why.
Obrigado, big panda. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you for all the guests. Again, we have a Telegram group and a WhatsApp group, which we are moving towards Telegram. As well, another piece of news, we're opening soon off-chain Porto, okay? Because we had a lot of requests from the community from Porto, maybe another city soon. And again, guys, you're welcome to join our Telegram group. We will drop on the chat below. And feel free to ping us, you know, ping me if you want to meet up, coffee, or you need any help on the project or direction. Okay, that's the reason why we are here.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that, guys. Até já.
Amazing.
Até já. Exactly.
Bye, guys.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Beijinho.
Thank you.
The Inside is Insight podcast is meant for informational purposes only and should not be considered as financial or investment advice. Nothing expressed in this podcast should be construed as a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any financial products. Information expressed by the host or guest of this podcast does not necessarily reflect any views of our sponsors.